I'm going to let you guys know who's on the panel. Wendy DuBose is going to actually moderate the panel today. Everyone knows that Wendy is the CEO of the Chicago Urban League. I'm sorry, it's Chicago United Way. Sherry, Wendy, they're both friends. I get how that goes. We've got Rob Ryder of the International Union Engineers League, and he'll be up in just a second. Darnell Shields, who's the executive director of Austin Coming Together, and then Charles Matthews, who happens to be the president of People's Gas. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask them to make their way up to the and while they're doing that, I'm going to do a little bit more multitasking. I don't get to give the mug away today because we put their water in the mug. That's pretty cool, wasn't it? Wasn't that pretty cool? Oh, come on, you guys. The City Club mug is a big deal.
Close.
Okay, because I get the whole sound issue. Sound, they went to moving mics and stuff. Are you guys good? Yeah. Three guys, they all moved the mics. Girls wouldn't have done that. Okay. So without further ado, I'm going to bring Wendy up so she can get started. They'll talk for about 25, 30 minutes, and then we'll be back. You're welcome. Oh, right.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is a pleasure to welcome you this beautiful May Day. Actually, May Day was yesterday, germane to our topic. But in any case, I am thrilled to moderate this panel of what I think is a very important and super interesting topic. And it's an esteemed group of leaders, friends, and all actually involved with United Way. Incredible colleagues that we have. So let me tell you a little bit why I'm excited to moderate this. This is a topic that's near and dear to my own heart. What you might assume are unexpected allies are actually, in fact, working very closely together, as you'll find out today, for the common good. And during this time of polarization that we're living through, I think what you're going to walk away from today is a very powerful sense of collaborations across what are perceived divides, and how actually when we break those down, really good things can happen for our neighborhoods. So this is a really hopeful discussion. United Way's role in all of this is to convene and to coordinate diverse partners, as you see at the table, to achieve community and solutions so that people thrive. The United Way Neighborhood Network Initiative, which you'll hear a little bit more about today, is a unique, tight-knit approach that helps accelerate these kinds of cross-sector collaborations between business, community-based organizations, unions, and many others by cultivating linkages that combine resources for community progress. Austin is one of our 10 neighborhood networks, and it focuses on early childhood and also financial stability. So I'm going to start right away out of the gate here with Darnell Shields, the head of Austin Coming Together. Darnell, tell us a bit about Austin, its demographics, and how you've been tackling the workforce needs of the community.
Okay. So Austin is Chicago's largest community by geographic size. It's also the second largest by population. Just under 100,000 residents reside in the Austin community. It primarily is an African-American community with a growing Hispanic population. We have a few Caucasians there as well. And in terms of conditions, the Austin community has suffered from many social and economic challenges for quite some time. For example, having an estimated 32,000 households throughout the community with a median income per household of about $30,000 annually, and almost 30% of those individuals are living below the federal poverty line. In addition to this, the unemployment rate in the Austin community is a little bit over 20%, and about 25% of those who can be employed do not have a high school diploma. And 85% of the entire labor force within the Austin community lack a post-secondary education. And, you know, so one could argue that these conditions among other challenges, have attributed to the 20,000-plus population loss that we've experienced in Austin over the past 18 years. Now, in terms of what we're doing within the community, you know, there's hundreds of organizations, institutions, leaders that have been serving the Austin community in terms of their families and children for many years. But unfortunately, due to the size of Austin, Austin's a very large community, due to the size and the complexity of the issues that we deal with, the needs for resources being very scarce, the efforts are often uncoordinated, decentralized, small in scale. It's one of the reasons why Austin Coming Together was formed, and it's it allows us to really help organizations address issues that we face within the community by restoring the social, economic, and institutional relationships that we're really hoping to achieve. We really focus on sharing a long-term vision and core values with organizations and community leaders and groups, and really looking to build trusting relationships, long-lasting relationships that allow them to collectively approach and take action together on the problems and issues that we face to improve the quality of life in Austin.
Thank you. Is there anything you might want to add about the neighborhood network and how you're working with workforce partners?
Yeah, so in terms of pipelines to careers and workforce partnerships and how we're kind of moving the needle on that, one of our impact goals that we're focused on is to really decrease the amount of individuals that are living below the poverty line. And we see ourselves doing that by developing pathways to living wage careers. And so what we're doing is we're really focusing on several sectors, the advanced manufacturing sector, healthcare, and construction. And in order to achieve this, we believe that you have to implement several activities. One is really focused on strategic outreach and recruitment. The other is a process for coordinated intake and referral. And then lastly, really being consistent with follow-up and continuously improving the quality of services that's being provided. With that, we started an initiative called the Austin Community Hub Initiative. And basically what we do with that is we're providing a high-quality, accessible systems of supports through our member base to be able to meet folks where they are in terms of their issues.
Great. Thank you. We'll pick up on that hub idea in a minute, actually, as we get to Bob. Just to sort of put some context around what Darnell shared, as part of the Neighborhood Network, United Way is wrapping resources around Austin Coming Together. As he said, they're really a backbone organization at the very local grassroots level, organizing the community of Austin. We're receiving funding from partners such as Wells Fargo that are supporting the work that Darnell shared in Austin, as well as corporations like BMO Harris Bank for this neighborhood network initiative across the region. So United Way in all of this is working with Darnell and other community-based partners in providing funding, technical assistance, measurement platforms, in-kind resources. That's the kind of interconnectivity that I was referring to. We have other neighborhood network supporters from corporations around the region. Some of them are here today, Blue Cross and Blue Shield, Mesro Financial, KPMG, NICOR, GAS, Northwestern Memorial Hospital, Target, and many, many foundations. Charles, I'm going to turn it to you. Peoples Gas and North Shore Gas have invested significantly in another one of the neighborhood networks in the community of Little Village through United Way, but also through a very new, innovative, and significant training facility, as well as through many other routes. So can you share a little bit more about some of the successes and lessons learned of all of that work in Little Village?
Sure, Wendy, but before I share some of that information, let me, as a longtime supporter of United Way, as a board member, a new board member, let me just thank you for all the work, all of your contributions you've made to United Way. Thank you. Peoples Gas has a longstanding commitment to this community. For most of you, you probably know, or you may not know, that Peoples Gas has been in this community for over 165 years. That commitment is built around two underlying principles. One, and these are going to be very complex, so you might have to think about this for a little while. The first one is, this one's really tough. It's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. As an individual and as a corporation, it is absolutely the right thing to do. Not only does People Gas expect, you know, the company, or I expect the company to do these things, I expect employees to do it. This past weekend, we had 150 employees out helping restore, renovate a shut-in Boys and Girls Club in the neighborhood of Garfield. So our employees get it. The second principle is a principle that probably is one where most people believe is why corporations get out and support and help with community building. And that is, I have yet to see any corporation, any business, be successful in a failing community. It is not sustainable. Those two just don't go hand in hand. And when I talk about a failing community, I'm talking about one where the citizens of that community cannot find gainful employment, cannot get a good education, and cannot get good health care, the three pillars. You know, there's a fourth one that people would argue that crime would be one. And I would tell you, if you take care of the first three, you've probably taken care of most of the fourth. So with that, let me talk about, you know, I'll give you a real life example how that relates back to us and some of the initiatives that Wendy mentioned. For anybody here, you know, that has to maneuver in downtown Chicago, if you've seen a construction barrier, odds are 50% chance that it was one of our barriers, because we're in the midst of one of the biggest modernization programs in this country. We have to replace approximately 2,000 miles of pipe that's underground. It's been underground for more than 100 years, some of it before the Chicago fire. And the good news is it survived the Chicago fire. The bad news is some of it is still underground. This is a Dunning challenge for us. Then when you put, and it's been successful, we've had a lot of success stories coming out of that program, even though we got off to a stumbling start probably 3 or 4 years ago when this program started. We've stabilized that program, a lot of successes. So I'll just share some. We've reduced the leaks, which is what the program's intended to do. Two, last year, 2017, we spent $100 million with diverse suppliers. 2-3 years ago, that number would have been less than $10 million. And third, and this is the most important one, and this is the challenge we have, and I'll connect some of the partnerships we've created. We require 1,900 full-time employees at peak construction, 1,900. At the same time, we're facing the same challenge that most companies are facing with this retiring baby boomer population. We have more people going out the door than coming in. So, to address that challenge, we did several things. About 4 or 5 years ago, we started this program, a partnership, a program called Utility Military Assistant Program, where we go out, we recruit approximately 100 veterans in a partnership with our local union, 18007, city colleges. We recruit and train approximately 100 veterans a year, and we hire everyone to complete the training. If you look at our workforce today for represented employee, they make up, in 4 years, 4 short years, they make up a third of our workforce. A third of our workforce, which is an incredible number. And we could not have turned that program around, and this is a partnership, again, with local 18007, Power for America, and city colleges, a lot of nonprofits and labor working together. But even with that number and what we've been able to do, it's not enough. It's not enough. Those 1,900 positions we're getting work out of, a lot of that has been driven by overtime. So we have the capacity to hire additional bodies. So last year, and this is what Wendy mentioned, we built a $20 million training center in Little Village. Because not only do we need new employees, we need better trained employees as well. We built a $20 million state-of-the-art gas training facility in Little Village, and we partnered with CPS, where we are now attracting, training students, high school students, through a similar program that will allow them the same opportunities to seek gainful employment coming out of high school. That will help fill the gap. Lastly, 2 years ago, we heard about the neighborhood network and sounded like it would certainly fit and help us with that challenge. And we thought we would start in 2016 just with Little Village, and we did. We quickly found out that this program was so good, so consistent with our addressing our challenges, that we expanded to support the full umbrella of neighborhood network, and we are excited about that. So let me just close by saying, as a result of those partnerships, our modernization program is strong, the company is strong, and more importantly, the communities we serve are stronger.
And as I transition to Bob, I would just put together the comments that both Darnell and Charles shared and kind of make a connection that what you see is this really interesting layering of partnerships and layering of new initiatives and creating pathways to work together. And I think it's that, and Charles said this so beautifully, and all the different things that People's Gas is doing, is the generation of all those new pathways that layer on top of each other with partners that also helps sustainably make this change. So I'm going to actually turn it to Bob Ryder. You may or may not know that he was elected yesterday as the new president-elect. So not officially elected, but the president-elect of the Chicago Federation of Labor. Bob, you know, the CFL has always been about developing pathways for folks toward employment. Can you talk a little bit about the Access United program, very special program that actually involves many of us here on the panel, and some of the issues that you see that are requiring triage among all these different kinds of partners to solve together?
Yeah, thank you, Wendy. Before I get into that, though, I just have to point out that I've been in this job for less than a day, or at least elected to it for less than a day. Jim Francik's already sitting in my seat. I mean, come on. Francik. So I just want to start by, you know, also thanking Wendy. The partnership with labor and the United Way goes back to the days of the community chest, right? If you're familiar with the history of the United Way and its work at all, it goes back to the 1940s with the labor movement. And it's a strong and important partnership that we have in community. But as I tell this story, it also helps connect our partners in business. You know, the CFL has always been interested in, you know, doing as much work as we can and facilitating as much work with our employers that represent our affiliate unions, and also doing work with various community organizations in different ways. In fact, I think for a lot of folks, when they see labor out on the street doing its community work, they identify a lot of our service unions with doing some of the outward, work with those organizations. But one of the things that I recognized was all the work that our building trades affiliates do in the community to try and diversify their workforce. And a lot of times they don't get enough credit or acknowledgement for doing it. But that's because that's not what they're looking for. They're looking to do the things that are necessary to make sure that we have a vibrant workforce that really does bring in the best of the best. And that means reaching into neighborhoods like Inglewood and other parts in Austin and other parts of the city. And Jorge Ramirez, who is, you know, for at least for the next few days, is our president and a very good friend of mine and a partner for the last 8 years as I was secretary treasurer with him, we were talking about what we can do to help our affiliate unions do this better. I mean, I have the carpenters unions right here. The laborers are, you know, somewhere in the room, and the painters union. And I can't, you know, thank them enough for the work that they have done for years in this space of trying to work these community relationships to produce a strong and diverse workforce for their employers. But how could Jorge and I were talking about how we could better connect it. Then we were looking at our relationship with United Way. I was at a presentation that United Way was doing a few years back, and Darnell actually was doing a presentation, and one of the as he was doing his presentation, he had a partner list up there. And one of the partner organizations he had up there was a group called Manufacturing Renaissance, which is a partner of ours. We're a deep partner with them, and we do work around Austin Polytech High School, or now it's Austin Multiplex, where we help facilitate a vocational program in the Chicago Public School to help kids in the Austin neighborhood. So we have a relationship with the United Way, and we have a relationship with Manufacturing Renaissance, and those organizations have a relationship with Darnell's organization, right? We have, through our gas workers union, so the program that Charles was talking about with the gas workers, 18007, we're the case managers. In fact, one of our folks that now works in our United Way program, Mike Harkey, was a case manager for that program before he went to work at the United Way. So we have all these partnerships going two directions, but not going in three directions, not like they should. So Jorge and I were talking about how to do this, and in the most obvious way that we thought is, what could we do around helping the building and construction trades unions have a source to help vet some of their community relationships? Not all of them. They have a lot of strong ones that are going on, but we could also then provide interplay between the various trades, right? Because someone gets into a program, and Dan Allen from our labor management group, Cisco, is here, and he's a partner with Access United. He does a lot of this outreach work for us. And we went to Dan and we said, can we do this? Can we figure out a way to connect this better? And then we worked with the Building Trades Council, and we have Mike Massaleo here representing the building trades and his president, Ralph Affroni, and they said, let's do this. This makes sense. But we need to do it in a broader way too, and I'll get to that in a moment. So the idea is we go in and utilize the United Way Neighborhood Network with this Access United program. And it's a program that the United Way has worked with us to develop to provide wraparound services for people in these communities that want access to job apprenticeship opportunities in the construction trades. And let me tell you, we started this program, we talked about it for 2 years. We rolled it out a year ago as a pilot program. It just... some of the outcomes we've had thus far. 16 candidates offered apprenticeships in 6 different trades, actively working with 70 candidates as they apply for apprenticeships. Over 150 individuals provided information about apprenticeship. 54% of the candidates are African American, 22% of the candidates are Hispanic or Latino, and 16% of the candidates are women. This is just on a pilot program. And what does Access United do? It educates the candidates about career opportunities in over 20 trade apprenticeships, provides comprehensive case management to candidates seeking trade careers, prepares candidates for assessments, screenings, and interviews so they can put their best foot forward, supports candidates through application and as they start work, connects candidates to experienced mentors in their trade, provides financial resources to low-income candidates for tools, boots, books, and fees, works with partners in neighborhoods across the city and suburbs, especially on the south and west sides, and provides services in 13 different locations. And Austin Coming Together is one of the groups that we're working with on this project. And I really, in going through this, I've got to give a lot of credit to Andrea Kluger, who's our director of our labor partnerships with United Way, because she put in a lot of work with Mike in pulling all this together. Andrea sat down with those 20 different trades and learned what it takes to get through the process, because a lot of times people don't have the social and family infrastructure to take this step, right? And another challenge that they have, and Darnell probably knows this all too well, once they've taken the step, sometimes they don't have the support and infrastructure to take the second step and the third step and the fourth step. So when we talk about the case management, it's not us. Andrea and Mike help coordinate the resources. They work with the programs that are going to provide the education and the motivation while they're in the program. But the case management comes from our community partners who we work with to make sure that they are the ones who have these resources. So there are advocates in the neighborhoods, right? All too often we get splintered off working with different groups. And what's important is that we have good partners to tie it together. And I'll talk about the hub real quick because I know I'm going
slow. Okay, super
slow.
Quick.
Somehow I developed this. We do a lot of workforce development at CFL. We've been doing it for 20 years through our workers' assistance and our workforce and community initiative. Now the goal is to connect all our other workforce development programs in the industrial and service sector with our opportunities in the building trades. Because when you walk in, you may think you want to be an electrician, or you may think that you want to work as a building service worker, but maybe you're going the other direction. And we want to make sure we give people best outcomes doing the things that we know that they'll be successful at.
Okay. So hopefully you've heard through these three not only very specific examples that show how this all interconnects, but I think you heard the passion with which everybody is doing this as well. So I'm just going to wrap this up because we want to get to your questions, but I want to say a couple things. I think what you see in all of this is literally a way for what are unexpected partners to come together and get traction together in tandem. And when we do that, get a lot of leverage out of all of our work together. And that leverage is really important right now from a public point of view as we look at receding public funding. These are all initiatives that are happening in different arenas that are not actually publicly funded, right? So this is a way for community leaders and activists and all of us under the tent, corporations, unions, to come together and make more for our neighborhood. So I think what you heard today is corporations are bringing investment, they're bringing know-how, they're bringing employees. You have community-based organizations such as Austin coming together that are providing leadership on the ground, and really the ability, as Bob so eloquently said, make all of this happen through community partners. And you have the unions that are bringing training and career opportunity pathways. So how is United Way sort of circling around all of this? We are connecting the dots. And we do that. We are the largest private funder after the Government for Human Services. We believe in this networked initiative and in bringing together all kinds of partners, expected and unexpected, to pull in tandem together and make more than the sum of the parts. And we do this, and it was mentioned several times on the panel today, all these folks are leading inside of United Way, as well as each of their individual roles. We're doing this to fight for the education, health, financial stability, and safety of every person in every neighborhood. Charles went back to this in his very basic tenets of why People's Gas is doing what they're doing. So I hope you have seen through this conversation the role that each organization plays, but how it comes together and intersects. I think we find this all very hopeful. It's why we wanted to share this story with all of you to encourage other partnerships that are needed at this time. I think it's going to take the interlocking of all kinds of actors in the private arena, such as all of these, to really make our neighborhoods as strong as they can be. We want to get to your questions, but before we do that, I want to thank our panel. I want to thank the City Club for hosting us. I want to give a shout out to the United Way team, who is here in force, for their incredible work, for all of which this would not be possible without them. And then we want to turn it over to your questions. So I think folks are coming around if you have questions now. Some were submitted in advance, which I can just get to right away as we gather more. So this is a first question from Natalie Lasek, the Center on Halsted, who is a City Club member. And the question is, are you collaborating with the Chicago Community Trust or any other Chicago Community Foundation on their priorities? And if so, great. Can you share any examples of this work? So I will start by answering that question, and then I want to also open it up to the panel because I know they're also working with the Trust in many ways, is my assumption. So United Way and the Trust have had a long-standing partnership and work on many common initiatives together to today we are talking about the intersection of this work, so the neighborhood networks. The trust has funded and supported our neighborhood networks and granted to us for work in particular inside of Austin and also in Brighton Park. They are also funding and supporting through their workforce development initiative some of the workforce activities that we talked about today. We are also talking to the trust about larger partnerships in neighborhoods because the trust also has had neighborhoods, as you know, neighborhood development on its mind for a very long time and continues to do so. So longstanding partnerships there in funding and how we work together around this. I'll open it to the panel if you want to add to that in any way, shape, or form. That was said from a United Way point of view.
Yeah, I would just say that through the Access United project and also the development of this hub, we do a lot of communication with the Chicago Funders Alliance, which is part of the trust. And one of the things we're actually able to create, which is tangible for the Access United program, is a barrier reduction fund. And this barrier reduction fund can be used for someone applying to a program to pay their initiation dues as they get brought into a union apprenticeship program, to buy boots or to buy tools, the things that they may not have ready money available to, you know, take that first step.
And I'll quickly add that we do have a partnership with the Chicago Community Trust. About 3 years ago, post acquisition by WEC Energy Group, as we put together our community plan, we knew that this couldn't be a one-year enhancement of that commitment, that it had to be sustainable. And part of that sustainability was establishing a partnership with the Chicago Community Trust.
Great. Next question from Joni Friedman, University of Chicago Office of Civic Engagement. This is for Darnell. How has your time in the Civic Leadership Academy impacted the way you approached your work, and what specific connections did you make that influenced your work?
Hi,
putting
Joni.
Darnell on the spot.
Joni, you in it?
I see you.
Yes, I will definitely give a plug to the Civic Leadership Academy. And thank you for coming. Thank you for being here as well. You know, I think I've often said this in other conversations that we have. I was an inaugural fellow in the Civic Leadership Academy in 2015 when it first started up. And I thought I was embarking on going into a leadership program that was really going to be about you know, all of the different types of skill sets you would need in terms of being a leader, in terms of management, finance, all of these different things from a business perspective. But I ended up getting access and going through much, much more. And it was really about self-development, like really going inward, really looking at how you can recognize the impact that I could have on what other people do. And so what that's done for me as a leader, it's really allowed me to leverage some of the skill sets that I didn't really believe would lend to this space, because my background is in business development and corporate. And when I came into community development and social work, I was able to really start to identify that the skill sets that I brought to the table were actually very useful and could, you know, really kind of spur innovation around a lot of the things that we were doing and motivate other people within our space to start to think differently and really start to work differently. And so I really attribute a lot of that to being a part of that program.
It's a great question that I think gets to how we work together in cross-sector collaborations. So I'm going to put the spotlight on Charles now. This is from Dory McWhorter at the YWCA Metropolitan Chicago. What advice do you have for corporations to begin to operationalize business objectives and community opportunities?
First of all, I find it difficult to believe in 2018 that I need to answer that question, because this is so obvious. And I joked early on about it starts with doing the right thing, and it starts with just looking at your business model. You know, the communities you serve, and with us, it's even clearer because we serve Chicago proper and the northern suburbs. The communities we're building up are our customers. They are our customers. You know, that's common sense. So I think any business if they would look at their customer base, you know, really follow their business model to the end customer, this becomes a no-brainer. I don't know what else to say. And again, the corporations that have not figured that out probably are not around anymore.
Thank you. So this is a question from Nicole Lee with United Airlines, and it's a good question. What is the biggest barriers to creating these multi-sector partnerships? I'm going to give the panel a minute to think about that. Bob, you want to jump in?
Well, I mean, I come out of the construction industry. The union that I used to belong, or I still belong to, but I used to work for, is the operating engineers, and we have vibrant labor management partnerships. You know, we have labor management cooperation committees, and we even have some folks here that work for groups like that that do that promote the industry and find common ground and tackle problems. We don't have it everywhere in the labor movement, but we definitely have a strong partnership in the construction trades. Having that, but we don't always have that third element connecting community as part of the triangle. So that's why I think the United Way serves as such a great forum for where you have that vacuum, where you don't have that existing, you know, other piece to develop those multi-sector partnerships, especially if you're trying to do it in a broad-based way like we're trying to do with some of our programs, where it's not just about one trade or one type of workforce, where you're trying to give people mobility to move between different ones.
And actually, I'll just add to that from, you know, community development, grassroots organizing space. I think in terms of relationships, there are a couple of factors that, you know, really present barriers in terms of the actual interests in which relationships are built. You know, a lot of times self-interest can be very troublesome in our space, and really kind of navigating that, because everyone wants what they want. And so you really have to try to take the time to figure out where our interests intersect and how the benefit for everyone can be mutual. There are two other things that present a lot of barrier. In some cases, it's resources. Either an organization that may be funded to do work that is really focused on helping folks in crisis, but while they're accessing these individuals, they really don't have either the bandwidth or the resources to really focus on more long-term strategies, things that could really move individuals to sustainability. And so that's what partnership really starts to, you know, be important, because it helps fill in the gaps for those organizations that really have the heart for the work, but they just don't have the bandwidth or the resources. And then lastly, I'll add is that, you know, in spite of having the resources, having a relationship, where you're in a situation where there are policies and structural barriers that really do not allow the organizations to be able to stretch beyond what they actually could be able to provide. I think these are, you know, very staunch barriers that come in the way of organizations being able to do the work that they're so committed to being able to put forth.
I would just add, in the role that we play, this is a whole different ballgame. Darnell kind of spoke to some of the pieces of it. So while this is super hopeful, and I think this is really critical for the future of working together to really make sustained progress, it's not easy, right? So folks have to essentially come at leadership. This is coordinated leadership, which is very different than I'm leading for a single organization. This is I'm leading for the greater good of this initiative or this collaborative or this neighborhood network. And so you have to check, forget ego, you have to check your organization's agenda at the door and put it secondary to this greater good. And that can be hard to define specifically what that is. It can be hard to re-engineer all the work that you do and the people that you have to work toward that. And just simple things of how do you all come together as a collective and who takes credit for what. Everybody can come with the best intentions, but how do you actually do it? And so it's hard work, but it's worth doing. And I think everybody at this table has been working hard, and it's hopeful, and there's a lot of progress being made. Another really interesting question here from Heather Sather, and says, clearly the four of you have realized the benefits of working with communities like Austin that have historically been overlooked or excluded. Can you highlight some strengths that these communities bring to help others jump on board? Great question.
don't know if you
repeat the question.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, that was fast. Okay. So
hi, Heather.
We says clearly that we have realized the benefits of working with communities like Austin that have historically been overlooked or excluded. Can we, as a panel, highlight some strengths these communities bring that help others jump on board? In other words, would attract others to do this kind of work that we're doing?
I mean, I think it's the commitment of people like Darnell and his organization to try to figure out solutions because they already know what the problems are, right? And there's a lot of, you know, it seems like these days people want to dwell on the problems and they don't want to focus on the solutions, but you don't have any movement forward unless you're doing that. And you know, you have to go to the community and you have to meet communities where they're at and try to work through what those solutions look like.
And actually, I'll just add to that and say that, you know, Heather, the organization St. Joseph Services that you lead and other organizations like that, really stepping up and having a heart and standing in the gap in a lot of these places where the community doesn't really have the wherewithal to approach these problems. I think those are some major strengths that we have, and a lot of times they go undervalued in terms of how, you know, organizations are really sort of like out of position in times, being able trying to serve folks in the community where, and it puts a great strain on them. And so the more that we can really kind of identify that, recognize that, acknowledge it, I think we could kind of move to a place where we're better harnessing the collective power that community organizations and leaders can bring to the table.
And Wendy, I'll just add, in the neighborhoods that we've been in, the common denominator in all of those neighborhoods where we've seen success is strong political leadership by the representatives. We've had incredible leadership, especially Little Village and in the other communities. That's a piece of the partnership that's just necessary to make this successful and sometimes to lead the way for these other communities that have not benefited from it. And the other piece is hunger by the individuals in these neighborhoods. It's not every one of them, but boy, when you find a gem, you have found a gem. Some of our best workers coming out of these neighborhoods, you know, again, we're not starting with the thousands, but those four or five that we're pulling out of those neighborhoods are worth it.
I just want to pick up on that last point. I would say as United Way, and we're in a really good position to say this, in the neighborhood networks that we have and in the neighborhoods that we're working in, it's the energy, it's the talent, it's the drive of folks in the community, the leaders in the community, and their organization that we're building around. And that is the trajectory, right? That's really what takes this forward, right? So it's making sure that the leaders that are on the ground that are organizing themselves to do so much get the resources that they need. So I would say the biggest compelling factor in all of this is take a look at what the local community organizations are doing and how they want to work together and get this done. And if they do want to work together in this fashion and get it done, that's the biggest selling point, if you will, for investment and support. And I'm going to end with one more question here. This is City Club, so we got to take this question, and it's appropriately polemical, from Lawrence Massal at the Civic Federation. Got to take a question, and this may seem like it's off topic, but it's not actually. It's the right elephant in the room question. It says, thank you for such a positive group of United Way leaders. Are the members of the panel optimistic, and why, that support for United Way agencies and partners and our social services infrastructure is a priority in our state capital? So we will end on that topic and see if the panel has any thoughts. Please, because I'll jump in too.
I am optimistic. Well, first of all, there's no silver bullet out here. We know that. We can't just invest in one program. Even neighborhood network is as good as it is. It's not going to, you know, fix the challenges we have alone. It's all of the above. We do an umbrella of things, and I'm encouraged because I see more organizations. I see more corporations getting it, and that's why, you know, I had to think about how do I answer your question. Corporations are getting it. Maybe, you know, not fast enough, maybe at different paces, but they are getting it. The leadership's different. You know, Bill Brodsky, I forgot to, you know, give him a shout out, but he's on our board. Bill Brodsky, when I first came here 3 years ago, he and I sat down and we talked about, from a board of director, what was my community plan, working with Mary Hopp, our manager of corporate community partnership. Corporations are getting it. That's why I'm encouraged.
So, confession, I'm an optimist by default. So, I'm always optimistic. Everybody that knows me, my team, any other partners that we work with, I'm always bringing that to the table. But specifically now, in this day and age, I think because we've historically we've tried everything in terms of how to solve these complex problems. And so I'm optimistic because since we've tried everything, what do we have to lose with really bringing it to the community, bringing the community in, really partnering on every level and trying to provide some coordination that will really start to now, you know, give us the momentum that we need to be able to really move forward and do what's different, do the non-traditional ask, the non-traditional thing. So I'm really optimistic because we're constantly getting invites and platforms to be able to talk about this. And, you know, it's really been unconventional. So that makes me very hopeful.
So I think there was a 2-year period that we really discovered how important social service providers in this state really were and are. And they were put under a lot of stress, and they were fatigued, and a lot of them, you know, in many ways felt like they were on their last legs. But we had a lot of people that rallied around these organizations, and we were able to start putting them back together, and the United Way was part of that conversation. They were I remember a press conference that we did a couple years ago, and it was Paul Lasciazza from AT&T, Jorge, and Wendy standing up and talking about how we need to make sure that we support our social service providers. You know, we represent some of them in terms of their employees, but more than that, a lot of them are just partners, and they're an essential part of the fabric of, you know, a state that has not one but two urban centers, Chicago and Metro East. And I think that we have a lot of people in this state, and we have a lot of leadership in Springfield that understands the importance of these. And we certainly have folks here in the city of Chicago and the county of Cook who get it. But there are people who, you know, they rank them and they look at the issues and they're like, well, this may not be as important as some of the other issues, or maybe we can put it in the crosshairs. But I think we've got a table and we've got a group and we've got a room full of people that understand how important it is that we protect the social safety net of this city and this state.
So I'll say what I'm not optimistic about and what I am optimistic about. Not optimistic about that. Bob is absolutely right. We, United Way, spent a lot of leadership time and energy, thanks to a lot of the folks in the room in partnership, documenting what has happened to funding for social services, which has been on a steady decline. And as you know, at one point we didn't even have a budget. We documented that 1 million people fell out of service across the state when there was an impasse. So that picture of waning public resources at the state level is brutal for our social fabric. Not optimistic about that. Here's what I am optimistic about. We have a table full of leaders here, as I said earlier, working in the private arena, coming together, finding really creative ways to intersect and work together and make more than the sum of the parts, right? So that's really critical in and of itself, right? So that makes more with the private resources that are out there. But also, if we can do this together, if we can come together and do all the hard work to figure out how these unexpected allies come together and make progress in communities, I think we can start to chip away at the problems in the state. And it's going to take some unconventional, very creative thinking and collaborations across different dividing lines. I suspect this is where Lawrence Marsal was going, to get there. And I think all of these partners in the room at the table for sure would be willing to do it, and I suspect all of you would too. So I think we will tackle it. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Jackie. Thank you all.